Welcome, everyone, to the Bumblecast. I am your host, Ian Flynn, and joining me is my majordomo, Kyle Krause.
Hello, Internet. How are you doing?
They can't answer, Kyle. This is kind of...
I'm waiting patiently for their response. Don't rush me.
Well, while Kyle waits, welcome you all back to our third episode. Here we are. It kind of feels weird starting this late in the year. It almost feels like, you know, we're going to roll over to the next year. How do we divide this? You know, what is season one of the Bumblecast? Or do we not care? Do we just list it by episode? What are your thoughts, Kyle?
Personally, every show I've ever done, I've just listed it by episode. I don't really have seasons necessarily.
So. I like organizing things. I like putting them into piles and categories and making lists. Lists, Kyle. Lists.
List. We gotta have organization. We need organization.
It's actually the first thing I did when I was working for the Sonic books. The editor says, you know, can you compile some data files for me? You know, see, you know, what my work ethic is and how thorough I am. And it's like, I'm already geeking out about this. You're basically making me create a wiki for the company, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, gee darn.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. I'm so sad. I get to do exactly what I love to do. Oh.
When we did the encyclopedia, it's like, here, how long was it? 192 pages of nothing but data files. It's like, I'm only limited to 192 because I can make this multiple volumes if you like.
Was this about the comic specifically, or was it about...
Yeah. This was the big Sonic encyclopedia.
Okay. The thing nobody ever has access to except a few specific people, right?
No. This is the one that was published, the Who's Who.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was thinking this was like the internal...
Not the internal documentation
that will never be officially unveiled. That may or may not even exist. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if I can confirm or deny the existence of a comic series Bible. I can't even confirm which version I'm up to at this point.
Uh-oh.
Actually, I probably should update that thing. Anyway! This is old news by this point, but did you hear, Kyle, we may have found signs of extraterrestrial life? Ooh!
Didn't we already find that? Like, years ago? Extraterrestrial life?
No,
life on other planets, you know? Are you talking like intelligent life? Because we've known about life in other worlds for a while now.
Not in fantasy. Now, I'm talking specifically about our good friend, star KIC8462852. Yo, you remember that one, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I do remember that one. I was just there this past weekend.
Yeah. Nice place to hang out.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Apparently they being, you know, the sciencey type people, were taking a look at it and trying to look for an exoplanet or something. And all this stuff was flitting across it in ways that just don't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, if it were a planet, it would do this. If it were a shattered asteroid, it would do this. They went through about a dozen different options that made sense, and none of them really lined up. So somebody said, well, maybe it's, you know, an artificially created thingy, something that was made by another alien race. And this person was quick to point out, you know, the odds of this actually being an alien craft, a Dyson sphere or UFO or giant intergalactic dog park, you know, whatever, are slim to none. But because this is the internet and it is the slightest chance of there being extraterrestrial life, people said, oh, it's a Dyson sphere, oh my god! But it does raise the question, what if it's not, you know, some bizarre thing like a pulsar or some undiscovered facet of space? What if?
Or if it's just comets flitting across the light that is...
Yeah.
Something very mundane, yeah.
What if... In this day and age, we have actually made the first step at finding someone or something else out there. Is that the coolest thing ever, or should we be terrified?
I, for one, welcome our new alien overlord, so I don't know about you. I mean, to steal a joke from the Simpsons, I think so.
Simpsons did everything first, so at this
yeah,
point.
I'm thinking at that point, yeah, I think it is. So, yeah, I'm cool with it. Robots, aliens, whatever. It's fine. I got no problem with it.
I mean, what do you think alien life is like? I mean, there seems to be like two schools of thought. One is that, you know, life evolved on Earth in a certain way.
Right.
And it stands to reason that if it works here, something similar to it would work elsewhere. Yeah. You know, assuming that, you know, what other world is comparable to Earth would have similar, you know, wind currents, similar geography. And there's some weird stuff on Earth. So, you know, who knows what else other planets have. So, you know, if a bird works here, maybe it wouldn't necessarily have feathers on Google Flak or whatever it's called. But, you know, a flying critter with hollow bones and I don't know, whatever would constitute other feathers, maybe dusty edged scales. I don't know. What stands to reason that we would go to another planet, see a thing flying around and go, oh, it's a bird. Alien bird.
Right.
Tastes pretty good with a side of, you know, bacon, but, you know, it's a bird.
Alien or bacon.
Alien bacon. Well, of course, comes from the alien pig.
Yes.
That goes coink, coink. The other school of thought is that it's so alien, it's so different that we cannot conceptualize it. We would get to Google Flax and we would look at this thing and go, oh, it's a rock? Kyle, you think that's a rock? I think it's a rock. And it turns out to be like the prime minister of their people. I mean, who knows?
And you poke at it?
Yes. Hey, you alive? Yes. Hey, say something. Hey, you, hey. And thus begins the Third World War.
No, this would be the First Intergalactic War.
Well, I didn't say how many worlds were involved.
Oh, right. This, yeah, true. This could be the World's War.
I mean, I would imagine that if there were, heaven forbid, invaders from another planet, all our divisions, all the problems that really afflict this planet right now would kind of fall onto the back burner, and everyone would go, no. Our planet, no touchy.
Well, of course. Haven't you ever seen Independence Day?
I have, and that is an excellent documentary on how alien invasions would work.
And yes, it's a very good documentary. I really appreciate the effort they put into to have a biplane fly into the into the core of the alien spacecraft. Yes. Although that was that's the alternate ending, but you know, still. You can have alternate endings in the documentary.
Spend more time with the aliens in that movie, just because their big biomechanical suits were really neat.
Yeah, they're really cool.
I wonder if they'll get more into it in the sequel, if that ever gets off the ground.
We'll see. I forgot they were doing a sequel to it. Of course, well, they're doing a sequel to everything from the 90s, so.
Oh, yeah. We've already mined the 80s for all they're worth.
Yeah, pretty much.
So now we move on to the 90s. Was anything of note coming out in the aughts?
No.
Because that's when we started mining the 80s. So once we finish mining the 90s, we'll be in the 20s.
It's a big, we go back, it's a big cycle. 80s. We'll just do it all again.
He-Man, the re-reboot.
That's fine. I find it rather unlikely this is a Dyson Sphere. The internet's, of course, you know. It's always like, oh, aliens. Gotta go for the most outlandish thing. But nah. I'm sure it's something a little more mundane. But It is interesting. It's definitely another one of those space anomalies that we just don't know a whole lot about. But I hope we can discover more because, you know, science is cool and space is cool. I like space.
My excitement's tempered a little bit by the fact that it's 1,500 light years away.
Yeah, there is that.
So if we could, you know, send data at the speed of light to even look at the thing, we wouldn't know anything for 1,500 years. Mm-hmm. So, but then again, there are a couple of... Oh, shoot, what is it? It's been a while now, but they're working on a potential warp drive. Like, Star Trek-y style warp drive.
Yeah. I did see that a couple of years ago. Yep.
If the math works, it would presumably push space-time away from the vessel, creating this kind of bubble of, I guess, nothing? I don't know. If you move away space-time, what's left?
I don't know enough. I don't know enough about this subject to say.
And if there's no space-time, then one would think that the rules of physics don't apply within this bubble, so you could go faster than light.
Yeah.
So we could technically, or I, not technically, because not like I know the technical aspects of this, but we could theoretically just jump anywhere. But at the same time, if we're in this bubble of nothing,
mm-hmm.
and the laws of physics don't apply, what is there to keep us intact in the bubble? We are made up, what we exist within our own confines of our own rules of physics. So if we are set within this vacuum, what's to keep us from just not dissolving, you know? What if every protein in your body says, you know what, I don't like quarks anymore, and just, pff, you're gone.
Maybe.
You turn into a mathematical formula.
Maybe. There's been a lot of new research around the whole idea of quantum physics, so, I mean, the way we perceive things may not be the way things actually are, so you never know what could happen.
This whole talk about reality as we perceive it might be an actual 2D hologram.
Right.
No, sorry. I'm drawing the line on that one. I will accept that quantum particles can exist and not exist at the same time. All right?
Yes.
I will accept that there are particles that are in perfect sync, bajillions of light years apart, because that's the way it works. Fine. I'll accept that light only moves so fast. I will accept a whole bunch of stuff. You are not going to tell me that the 3D world we exist in is actually 2D because it's projected from another dimension. That just, I can't.
Or that we're just inside a glass dome, like a snow globe. The whole universe is a snow globe.
That one is kind of interesting because, how does it go? Because there is this kind of bubble around our solar system.
Right, yes.
It's beyond, what is it, something like the solar winds of our star as we move around the Milky Way create this kind of jet stream around us. And there is a certain point where we get no data, nothing. We don't know what's there. We can look beyond it. We can look inside it. But there's just this kind of band of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of creeps me out. It's like, what if, you know, is part of the multiple theories within the Fermi paradox, what if we are kind of being corralled and observed by something far, far more important and powerful than we can even conceptualize? And they're just kind of hanging out in that neutral zone going, haven't figured it out yet, have they? Mm-mm.
is this like back in the early days of the Sonic comic where we had Karheem of Wheat? Trying to observe Mobians.
Oh dear.
Oh man. That was the good old days.
You know, I think I would accept alien overlords if they all existed within puns.
That would be fine. That would be perfect.
Only in English puns, because that makes sense. Why not?
Well, yes. Duh.
In other space news, they found water on Mars.
Water is good. I like water.
Actual flowing water, like trickle, trickle, drop, drop. Not drinkable water, because, you know, Mars is being difficult, but...
like ice melted, and then there was water.
Yeah, I don't know. Call me a conspiracy theorist. I usually try to keep myself fairly grounded with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they, you know, send stuff to Mars going, let's hope we can find some idea that at some point maybe there might have been water vapor in the clouds somewhere. And then they find, you know, okay, there's water in the poles.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, okay, there's evidence that there used to be running water at some point.
Yeah.
And then they go, actually, it used to be a vast ocean. Actually, there's still running water here and there. I'm kind of thinking they're slowly getting us used to the idea so that, you know, next year they say, here are the Martian cave crabs. Nobody really freaks out. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, there was water, so of course there's, like, Martian crabs.
Of course there's life there.
Yeah, and it tastes great with Martian butter.
Well, yeah, of course.
I don't know, man, because there's apparently caverns and deep chasms.
Yeah.
Below the surface that would protect any potential life or even, you know, pools of water from the dust and the wind and whatnot. So I don't know. I really want them to find something. Not necessarily Martians, you know, like people, because that doesn't sound like a nice way to live. But I just want them to find something, like a little Martian minnow or a crab or a spider or I'll settle for a, you know, mucus fungus thingy. Just something that you can decidedly look at and say, aha, aliens.
I wonder if there's anything in the water or under the water. They probably haven't had the chance, or even if any of the landers there have the capability to analyze something on that level. I don't know.
Well, that was the thing when, which one was it? One of the rovers. It actually doesn't have the tools necessary for investigating along that line. And people are kicking themselves because we didn't know.
Yep. We'll have to send another one. Oh, darn.
Exactly. Would you go to Mars, Kyle?
Would I go to Mars? If it weren't a one-way trip, I might consider it.
Okay.
Right now, in our lifetime at least, it's probably going to end up being a one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how the technology moves forward in the coming years, though, it's possible. Maybe. It kind of depends. I mean, if we do leave this planet a smoking husk and have nowhere else to go, yeah, sure, I'd go.
I mean, if we get this theoretical ion drive or the microwave drive working, and we get this warp bubble working,
microwave and we can make, drive. You know,
have you heard of the microwave drive?
No.
I'm probably missing, you know, all the facts on this, but apparently someone put forward this design for a engine that would generate thrust without any heat trash, so to speak, any refuse, waste, there we go.
Yeah.
Just using microwaves within a contained space. And mathematically, it shouldn't work. And it was kind of poo-pooed and, you know, shoot, like, don't bring your pseudoscience nonsense in here, son, get out. Until somebody said, well, you know, the whole point of science is to test it. So let's test it, prove it doesn't work, and move on. Except it worked.
Whoops.
And they're going, okay, no, something's wrong here. There's got to be some kind of outside influence. There's got to be something has caused this effect when it shouldn't. And I think they tested it a second time, and it still worked. So they're currently looking into that, figuring out why, because it shouldn't.
That sounds pretty awesome. We need that. Put it on the Starship Bumblecast, and we'll head out into space.
Captain's log, Stardate 6743 hike. Kyle, forgot to bring in the waffles today. Breakfast will be pancakes as usual. It has been 7 months since we tried to go from Mars. It was supposed to be a 2-hour tour. I took a wrong turn in it. Albuquerque. I'm sorry, I had a stroke. Captain's log. Stardate.
And then you had to start over because you had a stroke? Sure, why
yes,
not?
Exactly.
Sure, why not?
Because strokes are funny, aren't they? But I don't know, man. I would like to visit. I don't know if I'd like to live there. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to set foot on Mars, if possible, just to do it.
That would be awesome. I do not disagree. It would be awesome to even, like, just going to the moon would be cool. And that is something that it's a little more attainable, I think, within a little bit more reasonable within maybe the next few years.
A round trip of a few weeks instead of a few months.
Yeah.
At best.
I heard a story recently that, Europe and Russia are looking into possibly building an underground space station. Not a space station, but like an underground, I guess, living area on the moon. I don't know. I don't know how far along this is. It's just something I just heard earlier today, but that could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it makes enough sense since the whole part is there's no tasty atmosphere to protect you from all that less tasty solar radiation that can kind of fry you in a few days.
Yeah. I just have to
wonder how you go about doing that, though.
It would definitely be a lot of work. I have to wonder why we're not at the forefront of that. What's going on? What's the deal? Well, because we should be there too with that. I mean, we're just not really invested in a space anymore. We went there once and we're like, eh, whatever. It's cool.
Well, we won the space race.
We won. Like, yeah, we win. We're done. It's like, did we really? Come on.
Not to get too political, but that's kind of the U.S. mindset. You know, we win. We're done. What do you mean there needs to be follow up?
Right. I guess we just have to say something about there being oil on the moon, and we'll be there tomorrow.
We'll be there yesterday.
What's that?
I mean, all you need to do is have Vladimir Putin say, America weak, we colonize the moon. And boom, NASA's budget will triple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just play the Rocky theme and, you know, say, Apollo died for the Apollo mission. Get back up there. But at the same time, we have a hard enough time getting astronauts to from the International Space Station. Building an entire underground complex on the moon? I mean, if they can do it, that's awesome. All for
yeah.
It.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That does remind me, though.
It would be a logistical nightmare. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, have you ever seen the probe photos sent by the Russian probes that went to Venus?
I might have. Are these recent or has it been a while?
Oh, this is like in the 1980s or so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure I've seen them somewhere along the line.
Because I knew we knew about the surface, but I never realized that somebody actually sent probes, so I looked it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do remember, I don't know where I heard it, but yeah, Russia sent a probe to Venus. And
it's spooky because, you know, you see the surface and it looks pretty much like Mars, just yellow.
Yeah.
It's nothing really to write home about, but then you realize that those are the only photos it took before the atmospheric pressure crushed it.
Yeah.
Before the acidic atmosphere melted it. That is metal as food. That's just horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, like, the atmosphere on Venus is scary. It's freaking gaseous and lightning striking everywhere, I think, and it's just crazy.
Sulfuric acid.
Yeah, it's no joke.
The probes that they're going to be sending out towards the Jovian moons, like Ganymede and Callisto. Oh, I want them to get through the ice. I want them to find a Jovian moonfish.
Yeah.
Oh, Kyle, I want us to find extraterrestrial creatures. I want to bring them back, and I want to eat them. I want to know what aliens.
It's always
like.
About food. That's what it's. That's yep. what it's all about.
I'm part of PETA, the People for Eating Tasty Animals.
Yes, of course.
I mean, we need to document what these species taste like and how best to prepare them before they disappear.
Well, of course, that's the most important thing.
It catalog this information for future generations.
It's kind of interesting. I wonder what's under the surface of like Europa.
Yeah, like is it just water? That's so boring.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think there'd be something there.
I mean, just imagine all the nightmare fuel that swims in our own oceans, devoid of light. I mean, whatever's out there can't be any freakier looking than what we've got here.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It might be.
No, we'll show up on one of the Jovian moons and we'll find that sea monkeys actually exist. They really do have kingdoms under the ice.
And maybe they're delicious. We don't know. We'll have to find out. We'll have to make sure a good grill is installed on Starship Bumblecast.
Darn it, Jim, I'm a line cook, not a doctor.
I mean, we're already going to have microwave, so why not?
Well, we could go home, except somebody decided to microwave all the Jovian sea monkeys.
Sorry about that. They're delicious, though, aren't they?
No, absolutely.
Oh, yes, of course. It's very much worth it.
And speaking of going boldly where no one has gone before, another science thing that they're hyping up, which probably won't be nearly as exciting as they say, is the folks running the Large Hadron Collider are looking at possibly discovering evidence of alternate realities.
I am totally down with that. I'm ready.
I mean, at the absolute most, what they'll probably do is bounce two little subatomic particles off each other with names that I can't pronounce. And they'll say, okay, if you plug it into this algorithm and do the math, it proves that, haha, yes, there are other realities out there. And scene.
And that'll be it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some people are expecting that it's going to open up the gateways to other dimensions and we're going to be, you know, all time splitter, stargate-y
stuff. Get some of these Genesis portals open.
I mean, what if out of all the infinite possibilities, we are the most stable reality, you know? What if we open up the door and we find out that we're the good sun out of all of realities and everyone else are the creepy extra in-law things that you don't want to talk to?
We're going to meet our evil twins.
And we just kind of sit down and laugh at everything because we pretty much get along.
How do we know that we're not the evil twins? We're not the evil alternate versions of ourselves. How do we know?
Well, I have a full beard instead of a goatee. I think I've got that going for me.
And I don't have any facial hair, so... I don't know. It's true. Like if I would look really bad with a goatee, though, so I wonder... I'd hope my my alternate reality counterpart would realize that he, too, would probably not look very good with facial hair. But Antifa
steps through the portal and looks at you and says, oh, yeah, I do look really bad with this. And he shaves and he becomes good Kyle.
Oh, so now we have two. Kyle too. Now we have two of them. Well, okay, I can send the other one to work for me. That's fine.
I'm just worried I'll meet alternate Ian and he'll be, you know, fit and handsome and successful. And it's like, oh, so I'm from the failure universe. Great. Perfect. Thanks.
Oh,
thanks
for that's depressing.
Well, let's tie this all together into
yes.
mutual interest. You were a fan of the Tales of series.
Oh, sure.
Which we've established.
Sure. I'm more of a casual fan at this point. I really haven't played any of them since Symphonia, really. But
okay, well, in Tales of Xillia 2, avoiding as many spoilers as I can. So, if you're willing, if you want to play this game and you haven't gotten to it yet, maybe skip ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll try to. I won't go into great detail. One of the central themes of the game is alternate realities.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a prime world, and that everything else kind of buds off of that. But because of all this budding, it's killing the prime world, so you have to make a point of shutting down these other realities. Problem being, the people in these alternate realities don't see themselves as alternate beings. They see the universe as the universe.
Yeah, of course.
So obviously, they're a bit nettled at the concept of being wiped out of existence. So,
as would we all.
I like my universe. It's where I keep all my stuff. You know, with this prospect of other realities, is there a prime us, or are we a facet of something even grander? And do we really want to answer that question?
Are we the prime reality?
I mean, if we're the prime reality, that's cool. I mean, we can say, yeah, we're the real ones. But what if we're not? What if we're, you know, Earth 75 and we meet our prime counterparts? Does that invalidate us? Do we look at our prime selves and say, huh, I'm better than you, actually?
Yeah, you know, we just...
I'll play Smash Brothers, see who gets to exist.
We really just need a good crisis to just sort all this out.
A crisis on infinite Earths, possibly?
Something like that. Some sort of infinite crisis. I don't know.
That could go on forever.
Some sort of identity crisis. Maybe. There's that. I don't know.
And if it doesn't go right the first time, we can just rehash it until we, you know, are happy with what we have.
Exactly. We can just keep doing it over and over. It doesn't really matter.
Probably shouldn't say such things. I don't need to be burning bridges when I'm looking for work.
I'm sure they're well aware of all the jokes by now.
I'm sure DC's top brass is listening into Bumblecast number 3. I'm sure Dan DeDito is like, oh man, Bumblecast, I gotta listen.
Oh man, that Ian Flynn guy, we're totally gonna get him to work on all our comics. Wait. Are they making fun of us? Not allowed.
Yes, Mr. President, launch the nukes.
Oh god, no. Man.
But getting back to all the big questions we're addressing and not really suitably answering, do you think we have been visited by intelligent life?
Possibly. I don't know if it's as outlandish as some of the more conspiracy theory style stories that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that maybe, if not visited, at least, like, observed. Like, on the same level we've observed them, they're just, like, looking at a planet and like, oh, hey, that's a planet. Cool. I don't know. It's tough to say. It's possible, but I don't know. What do you think?
Offhand, I want to just discount it, hand wave it.
But, yeah.
You know, whenever those, you know, did UFOs really exist kind of shows that hype everything up, they do drop, you know, tidbits that are hard to just discount, like the Renaissance paintings that have UFOs in them, you know, just straight up flying saucers, and you're sitting there going, okay, no, wait, where did they even conceptualize that kind of design, you know? The famous, is it Mayan or is it Incan? It's an ancient stone mural where it looks like a dude lying back looking through a major telescope. And it's not really something to question. It looks like a telescope.
Yeah.
It's not like you're stretching. You're not using your imagination. It's a telescope. Or the hieroglyphics that look like helicopters and stuff. Not just that, oh, if you look at it this way, it could look like a helicopter. It looks like a bloody helicopter. It's little things like that that kind of make you stop for a second and go, maybe? I mean, I don't think that, what are they called? The Whites? The Nords? Whatever the current term. The reptilians have infiltrated the White House, and that the Queen of England is really a lizard woman, and it's all part of the Illuminati's plan to sell us peanut butter, whatever. I don't think it's that degree, but...
If that's their plan, then that's a delicious plan, and I'm all for it.
It is. It is. And, you know, it goes well with the Jovian moonfish, but it's... I don't know. You would imagine that if they have the capacity to observe and to hide like that, really at this point, who cares? Because they're going to watch us and we can't really do anything about it now, can we?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely not going to immediately discount that. It's very possible. There definitely were some strange lights over Phoenix, Arizona back in the 90s that still aren't entirely explained, but it could have just been, you know, some sort of, I don't know, timey-wimey.
And then there's one like, this was on the Colbert Report years ago.
Yeah.
Somebody who didn't sound like they were crazy, somebody who actually sounded down to earth, saying, you know, there isn't any serious documentation or an investigation outside of the crackpots. And Stephen Colbert says, well, if these things are happening all the time, aren't they documented publicly? And the guy says they were. In the Chicago paper, you know, just this month, there was a disc-like object that appeared over Chicago O'Hare, was witnessed by everyone on the, you know, tarmac and waiting to get on the flight. It shot straight up into the sky, cut these perfectly circular holes in the clouds, and vanished. It was in the newspaper. But nobody's making a big deal out of it. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, why not? What was that?
I don't know. Military testing?
Unless the Google Flakians are making a weird cookie-cutter cloud.
Google Flakians, man.
I know.
They're the worst. Why don't they just say hi? I mean, we're friendly, aren't we?
No, we're not. You know better than that.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Especially since it's you, evil Kyle.
Oh, no, you've discovered me. Oh no. Now I have to. Now I have to go back and tell my leader.
Whoever that is. Who is the leader of evil Earth?
Evil Ian Flynn.
Dang. Evil me's gone up in the world. The great iron chariot made of claws and skulls comes through the interdimensional portal. Evil Ian, sitting upon his throne, wrought out of the souls of those he has conquered, looks down and says, "You, my brother from another world, what do you do?"
"I write comic books."
"I see. Burn this world!" And then, like, the 700 metal guitarists on this machine just start wailing, and it's really the coolest way the world ever ends.
Well, yeah, throw up the horns, man.
Everybody rocket out as Armageddon comes down.
Oh, yeah.
Death metal version of our theme song starts blaring. Dun, da, da, dun.
I want to hear that now. Come on. There's someone listening who might know, who might be able to do that. Come on.
$5 million makes us the death metal version of the Bumblecast theme.
We'll use that if someone makes it.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course.
If it comes in time, it will be the intro to episode number 4.
Of course. It'll be the intro to whatever episode we end up receiving. And if it happens, I'm totally down with covers.
On the theme of timing, how do you like that for a segue?
Uh-huh.
Once the show is out, Halloween will have come and gone. Do you have any plans for the trick and or treaters?
I'm not usually one to really get much into Halloween, so I don't really have any plans. What about you?
We're going to my mother-in-law's house because she lives in a nice neighborhood with a bunch of kids.
Mm-hmm.
and we are doing the full ensemble. My wife is big into Halloween, and we've got like a bunch of creepy video game music tracks that we're going to plug into a speaker and just have them pumping out of the garage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, legs under the garage door. There's a bunch of little cheapo skulls that are going to be nestled in the rock garden right at the door. So you walk up and it's like, oh, what a lovely little rock garden. Oh, God, some of those are skulls. And the piece de resistance is I've got this full Grim Reaper outfit with this perfectly reflective mask.
Nice.
And I'm going to stand there and wait. And they will not see it coming. You know, subtle things like change position when nobody's looking. Or drop the scythe so that when they pick it up for me, I can take it back and say, thank you. Last year that was the plan.
Yeah.
Except it was freezing cold and raining. So 3 kids came out total before we called it a night. And the only ones who came out were super little kids, like first Halloween ever, just a step above toddler. And the house was already freaking them out. And I was not going to be the one that traumatized these kids for the rest of their lives. So I'm standing there in the freezing rain. I can't see anything because my breath is fogging up the mask from the inside. And I don't want to move. Because if I move, I'm going to scare these kids. And I'm going to feel really bad. So I'm not moving. I'm not moving, I'm not moving, I'm not moving. I hear the dad say to my wife, wow, that thing looks really real. I would think it's even an actual guy. And she doesn't want to say anything, because if she says, yeah, it's a real dude, the kids are going to freak out.
Yeah.
So it's really, have you ever had to not move, and you realize that's the hardest thing to do, because when you lock up your muscles, you really need to move?
Uh-huh, yep.
I know. Add in the fact that it's freezing rain, Kyle. It was cold. I was shivering. It was dark.
What were you doing out in the freezing rain in full costume? Come on.
How else
you were really scared of the kids? I guess I can't fault you. You're really dedicated to this. But
I am an actor.
But man.
But yeah, so I need an Emmy for just not scaring those kids, because I did not move a bloody muscle.
Nice.
And first one we set up this year, I'm going to really hope that Grim Reaper costume is not all mildewy, because I'm not that dedicated to the part.
Yeah, it's weird, because around here, all the trick-or-treating and stuff generally happens before it's even dark. I don't know if that's the case over there, but I know over here it's like, yeah, the kids aren't even out at night anymore on Halloween. They'll do it before it's dark, and I don't know, might not even be home.
I mean, part of it is, you know, the safety of it all. You know, the idea of having small children with their vision obscured running around in the dark is probably not the best idea, but
yeah.
Supervision. I mean, it really comes down to the adults being adults, and, well, we all know how that goes sometimes.
Yeah, right. I don't know, there were years I went out just kind of with friends, but I was, you know, we weren't supervised by adults, but we went out, you know, fairly late at night. It was like 7-8 o'clock at night, and it was dark. And it was just what we did. This was like as late as like the 2000s, or at least maybe 2000, the year 2000. The year 2000. But yeah, I don't know.
What was your favorite Halloween costume?
Probably a tie between either Sonic or Mario.
You were Sonic one year.
Yes, I was.
This was before they actually made Sonic costumes.
No, this was the first year they made a Sonic costume. It was a really bad costume. It was like the one from the early 90s. It was really bad. It's really bad costume, like a really crappy half mask that came over your eyes. It looked really, really creepy. But hey, I was Sonic, so I don't care. Terrifying. What's that?
That sounds mildly terrifying.
Just a little. It was like a Batman mask with spines coming out the back. It was weird.
Where are the badniks? I don't know. Where are the badniks? Metropolis zone, I swear. Swear to me. Gotta go fast.
Yeah. I'm speechless. I cannot. The words they do not form. I can't even. I can odd though, but I can't even.
I'm odd enough. Don't worry.
What was your favorite Halloween costume?
I think my favorite. My mom made all of my costumes for me and labored over them and cussed them out when they didn't work. But she made some nice costumes. And it's a toss-up between Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle,
mm-hmm.
because the shell was an actual separate piece that was large enough I could tuck myself into it for the most part. And the other one was Gambit, circa the early 90s, with the pink shirt and the weird head thing.
Yeah, sort of like the head cover thing that he has, the head sock, I guess.
Yeah, and I hand Mom the action figure and say, make this, and she's looking at it like I'm insane. What she came up with, I think, is rather ingenious. She went out to Sports Authority, or whatever it was at the time, and picked out a scuba mask and mm-hmm. cut out where the hair would pop out and, you know, opened up the face a bit, and it made the head sock.
Yeah.
It worked really well. It looked authentic. It was incredibly hot in there.
Yeah.
I looked authentic.
The Mario costume that I had was all homemade. And this was back in the day when Mario's overalls were red instead of blue. Or was it the other way around? I think it was when they were red. Yeah, this was old school. This is like 5 or 6 years old. I remember the costume being really cool, but it was definitely homemade. It was, just regular red overalls from the store and a red t-shirt. And I forget how he did the gloves. I can't remember I think I just had like normal white gloves. I didn't have boxing gloves or anything. like Mario kind of has. It kind of looks like he has white boxing gloves. It's weird.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Hey, Mario, I'll do a rescue of the princess with boxing gloves on her hand. If there's anyone younger than, like, 30, they're not going to get Homestar Runner.
No.
Although they are updating still. It's very rare, but Homestar Runner still puts out content.
Yeah, occasionally.
Kind of wonder if they'll do a Halloween episode. It's been so long.
Yes, they really should. And then a Decemberween episode, because...
Yes.
Why not?
Why not indeed? Also coming up this Halloween, it's going to be old news by the time this podcast comes out, but if you haven't heard, the much heralded, long-awaited debut of The Lost Hedgehog Tales will go live on Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
For the handful of you that are listening to this who don't know what that is, and I know most of you do because you're all coming off of my Sonic work because I got to piggyback off of something. When I was writing for the comic... for my first 8 years, it was all built off of the comics that had come before. You know, my first issue was number 160. All of my stuff was based off of the 159 books that came before, never mind specials and tie-ins and whatnot. And for reasons beyond my control, I had to drop everything like it was hot. Yes, Kyle, drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. And start over. Well, I had a lot of spinning plates going on at the time. So Lost Hedgehog Tales will basically be a kind of overview of what I intended to do had things not been so horribly derailed.
As I say, I'm personally really looking forward to this, even though I love the direction the comic's going now. It's going to be interesting to see, at least read, like, what could have been.
What could have been if I didn't have an editor, or Sega wasn't looking at it, or if everything went my way, which is to say... Not bloody likely, but you know what my intentions were. So I'm going to try to put it out monthly. Folks have been waiting 2 years. I haven't waiting long enough, so yeah. I'm going to be starting that up. Happy Halloween. Kind of late, but I hope you enjoy.
And you
can find that at bumbleking.com.
And you have 5 chapters with this plan? Is it going to be a month per chapter?
That's the plan.
A month per chapter, yeah, I don't know. But chapter per month, I guess
I've also...
The syntax doesn't really matter.
I, in my infinite brilliance, timed this right when the holidays are hitting. So, you know, it might be bi-monthly. I really want to get this out there. Number one, and primarily just to get it to the people who really want that closure. The folks who have been really, really patient with me, which is greatly appreciated. The folks who, you know, are still impassioned and excited about it. The other one is I just want to get it done. I don't want it looming over my head anymore with all these like people online going, when is it?
When are we getting Lost Hedgehog Tales? Shut up!
So yeah, just get it out there, get it done, and then I can, you know, focus on other stuff.
Well, I suppose since it will be public knowledge by the time this episode airs, I'm also planning on returning a show of another podcast that I do, another show of mine, actually a live streaming show, but you know, there's podcast recordings of it available, or will be. My old show, Nitro Game Injection, is coming back. Yes,
NGI is coming back.
NGI for real, not this half game fuel thing that I do by myself. NGI with other people. Oh my gosh!
Is Larry Oji going to be co-hosting again?
Larry will be returning. Sounds like from my last discussion with him, he should be on for it. He should be good to go. So it's going to be once a month, though, for the time being.
I was going to say, how many shows have you got running right now?
It will be three. It will be the first Saturday of every month is the tentative plan right now. And that's going to be airing over on the 8BitX radio network. And you'll be able to find out more information about that over at KNGI.org, where you might be right now listening to this. Wow.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Be awesome.
And I've guest starred on that show three times?
At least. Let's find out. I can find out right now. I think it's been more than that. Let's see. You have been on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
Six guest appearances.
Three more than you thought.
Yes, I can count.
Hey, you can count and then multiply by two.
Let's not get too fancy here. All right. Well, you know, if you ever need a guest star, I know a guy.
I do too as well. He's a good guy. You'd like him.
Comes from the evil universe. He's known as Evil Slim.
Ah, yes. You figured it out. Bumble Emperor. You figured it out. Oh, man. He was my first guest. You figured it out.
Nobody can take him seriously because he's the clean-shaven one and baby face. True. Just for shame.
True. But yeah, if you enjoy video game music and talk of video game music and whatever else Ian and I end up talking about, probably food. Head on over there and check the show out. We'll be airing live on the 8BitX radio network, as I mentioned, the first Saturday of every month at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Very cool.
And of course, I'm on over there actually every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, but just for now, NGI specifically is just going to be the first Saturday, and then everyone after that will be just me doing a solo show, Game Fuel. So, for more video game music remix goodness, there you go.
And you got some good stuff on that show. The remixing community is really impressive, but that's a whole other topic. Let's have that for another episode.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about that for sure at some point. What do you think, Ian? Do you think it's time to get into some Q&A action?
I think it's time for some quand.
Some Q&A action?
Excuse me, it should be quanda. There is an A at the end.
True. Good point.
Unless it's a Quampster Sanda.
Are you ready? These questions are crazy. They're just going to come flying right at you.
All right. I'm ready.
Prepare yourself.
I am ready.
Metal Skulk.
Bring your questions. I will bring my answers.
Metal Skulk Bane asks, top five favorite robot masters. Go.
Oh, shoot. I'm glad this isn't timed. Well, personal favorite is Guts, man. Just, I can't get enough of the guy, and I really did make an effort not to show too much favoritism when I was writing the book. But, yeah, Guts, man's right up there.
Guts, man is awesome.
Shoot, there's 100 of them. I can't think of them all off the top of my head.
They don't all necessarily have to be the boss robots either. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah, well, that adds to it.
Yeah, I know. Two of mine are not boss robots.
Well, who are your two? Maybe that'll spark my memory some.
Two? Or do you want to be just list all five? Because I've already got all five ready to go here.
You go your all five and while I flounder. All
right, number one, Tempo, Quake Woman. I love Quake Woman. She's awesome.
I am really happy how much she took off, you know?
Oh, yeah, she's fantastic. Number two, Splash Woman, first female robot master boss represented.
Yeah, we'll toss her in the list as well, just because it isn't just, you know, the fact that she's the only official female Robot Master, but she's got a neat design on top of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Number three, this was actually the comics that really made this one more prevalent and awesome in my mind, Roll. I really like Roll, especially in the comics. She's just really cool. Number four would be Plant Man. Mostly I just like his music.
Good enough reason.
And his level. And number five would be Quick Man.
Yep, we're going to toss Quick Man in my list, in part because he turned out to have a lot of stuff to work with in the Mega comic.
Oh, yeah. Shadow Man is also really cool. I considered putting him in my top five, but he's at least in my, if I were to go like a top 10, he'd be on there.
We're going to add Inker to my list, just because I'm always a sucker for the direct rival, I guess. I mean, technically Bass should be in that slot, but I don't know. I like Inker's design. I like the fact that he has a pointy staff that he twirls to deflect shots. I mean, Ballad and Punk aren't bad, but Inker just stands out to me.
Inker is pretty cool.
What am I at, four?
Yeah, three, I think. Or are you at four? Who did we have? We had Quick Man. You had Quick Man, Inker.
Splash Woman. Guts Man.
Okay, you did too. Okay, so you're up to four.
Okay, well, if we're going to really just say anyone that was like a robot within the series, and I really wish I'd gotten to Sunstar.
From one of the Game Boy games, I think?
Yeah, the leader of the Star Droids.
Okay, yeah.
Just someone who is power incarnate. Someone who is bent on conquering a world, but in his final battle with Mega Man, sees the goodness that is in the little boy robot and changes his ways. And he's got this kind of Pharaoh-ish thing going on, and he has his own Death Star, and he shoots, like, sun plasma. It's just always cool.
His design looks really cool, yeah.
Along that line, you know, Pharaoh Man, and okay, you know, we're going to stop right there.
No, come on, we can keep going, we can talk about Robot Masters all day.
I like Napalm Man's design, it's just cool looking, and Centaur Man for the novelty of it all, and Toad Man because he's not a combatant, and Skull Man because he looks cool, and next question!
Proto Man, I'd say, is awesome. You know, of course. He's got a sweet scarf, that's mainly it, come on. A sweet scarf and a rad helmet, that's all you need.
His own theme song.
And that too.
All you hear is and you know it's on.
Oh yeah. All right. Fancy Fool asks, do you intend on giving an actual explanation to Amy's hammer, specifically how she summons it? Maybe it has a magical origin, or which I think was in the pre-reboot, or are you going to stick with Hammer Space? She just pull it out from nowhere and it doesn't matter.
It's whatever Sega says it is.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm not going to step on that toe anymore. I mean, in the old run, the question was, you know, kind of raised, and it was easy enough to work with what was presented. You know, the whole wishing upon the super ring, and I think I had it that it was stemming from her having this kind of slight innate ability to grant wishes. I don't know, that opened up a lot of potential doors. In this, she can summon the hammer because in the game, she summons the hammer.
Well, there you go. a bit different from the Sonic Boom comic where she loses the hammer.
And then loses her mind.
And then, yeah, but she like physically loses it. Like, she just summons it out of, she doesn't really summon it out of nowhere in Sonic Boom, I guess. Maybe she does.
In Boom, it's a little hard to tell. I think it's more tech-based. Like, yeah. It's supposed to fold down super tiny and then fold back out, but I don't know. I don't think it's ever been straight.
This is some Iron Man stuff going on here. What's up with that? All right, next question. Quantum Edge asks, how scared or scared/prepared are you for the possibility of Dubs becoming editor?
I don't know if that's going to happen, actually, but
nobody is prepared.
I mean, John and I get along great. We've worked together for a long time in various ways.
John's pretty fantastic.
But I'm in no rush to change editors for a fourth time. Editor, Vin Lovello, I don't know, we work really well together. We're on kind of the same wavelength, and he's younger than me, which makes me feel really old. And he's, you know, full of a lot of energy and creative energy, I should say.
Yeah.
that it's a fun new take on the direction of the book. So I really like working with Vin, and you know, I work with John in some capacity since he's assistant editor, and I don't know if it works out that way, could be cool, but you know, for now I'm happy with working with Vin.
All right. Let's see. Next question here. Meals asks, if there were any characters you could bring back from the pre-reboot continuity of Sonic, who would they be, and how would you piece them into the new continuity? This is kind of a loaded question, or at least a long one.
It's also a tricksy one,
yeah,
because as I have said repeatedly, publicly, on multiple venues,
you can't do that.
Online, is I can't really talk about who's coming back and who isn't for reasons that I can't really get into.
Right.
So saying who I would bring back would confirm who's not coming back. Ergo, it could potentially cause problems. So I'm going to have to bow out of that question. It's a bit of doublespeak, I realize, because once Lost Hedgehog Tales is out and complete, it should be pretty clear. You know, you could be able to make the logical leap of what's staying and what's not. But as long as I'm not directly confirming it, I guess I've got the wiggle room.
Are there any characters you'd like to see come back that maybe aren't tied into necessarily the old comic continuity, like Lupe, who recently returned in 277?
Pretty much. In terms of, like, Sad AM and Adventures of characters, I've pretty much gone through the list of those that I want to bring in and revamp. Once we finish the Shattered World saga, what I'd like to do is, you know, delve into the new world that we set up. Because everything since the reboot has been set up. You know, we set up Moropus, we set up Mighty's thing, we set up Breezy's empire, set up Lupe, Dulcie has been revealed. There's a huge subplot that I'm setting up there. There's other stuff that'll be coming shortly after that that I want to get into. Each of the Freedom Fighters, I really want to get into their personal stories. So there's a lot of... We've already introduced a ton of new material. My next goal is to play with it. Do something with it.
Yeah, I'd still like to see Styx jump universes. Why not?
That would be cool. That would be fun. I've got an idea on how I'd like to do that, but nice. It's whether or not Sega would let us, you know, cross-pollinate between Sonics.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I mean, she's got official art on the Sega channel. She's showing up in the Olympic Games. It's not impossible, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It's still very, very early in, you know, the whole boom thing.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I thought that was the fifth one. Since I ducked out of that, we would do one more. But anyway, go on.
There is one more from PelePele06. I'm interested in hearing Ian talk a little bit about manga and anime, and if he likes it at all, and what are your favorites or inspirations, and are you currently reading or watching either of them, or anticipating any that are coming up?
You know, I was actually going to suggest that as a topic for Bumblecast episode in the future, which we can maybe revisit.
Yeah.
But in brief, I do enjoy manga and my animes. Haven't been following anything closely at the moment. That's mostly because I haven't been following a lot of media because I've been, you know, head down working on most everything or playing a video game. Top two personal favorites in terms of anime is Cowboy Bebop.
That's everyone's favorite.
Because it's just so good. It's so solidly put together. I mean, the music selection, the visuals.
Well, the music is fantastic, yeah.
I went back and watched the movie recently, and it's kind of slow, but, you know, the whole thing is just really, really good. The ending still gets me misty-eyed in that kind of beautiful tragedy sort of way. It's just so excellently put together, which makes the next project that the director did, Samurai Champloo, all the more disappointing. I did not like Samurai Champloo. I mean, it had its moments, but I couldn't get into it. I didn't feel like it came together as well as Bebop did.
That's one I need. That's one, you know, I still haven't even watched it. I really need to sit down and watch it. I've seen parts of it here and there, but I'm like, if there's one thing that I'm really behind on, it's anime.
In terms of manga, the best out there is Full Metal Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whenever I look at a project that I want to put together, I say, how can I make it this tight? How can I reach that bar? And then I get really depressed because I realize I'm not that good. I can never reach that level. But Full Metal is just so exquisitely crafted that it's inspiring and it's humbling and it's terrifying. And thankfully, the anime version, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, is worth a watch because it's extremely faithful to the show. Sorry, to the manga. Intro episode it does that is wholly original fits in the theme, and it's absolutely gorgeously animated start to finish. There are no, you know, bad episodes. Everything is top notch. That being said, the original anime adaptation, which is just Full Metal Alchemist, should be avoided like the plague because it deviates way too much. And that's wrong because Full Metal is brilliant and should not be touched. And I will fight you. I will fight you in the street over that.
As it, like, is it going to be a street fight? Are you going to be a street fighter, as it were? Say yes.
I'm trying to set up for the Shuriken joke. Come on. But it doesn't really work on my end, I guess. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
But I mean, other stuff out there, just tossing names out, I guess. Tabatonga Gurren Lagann is kind of a guilty pleasure because there was more than one instance when I was going through it going, why am I watching this? This is kind of by the numbers and I'm kind of bored. And then it would do something. It's like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. You got a true emotional reaction out of me, you stupid bloody show. The finale, if you haven't seen it, is just so ridiculously over the top. I love it. It's just, I mean, my drill will pierce the heavens. You can't really overcome that. It's just, oh, it's fun. And another top ranked one for me is Mobile Suit Gundam 08 MS Team, which is not only just a mouthful, but it's a kind of side story, I guess, to the original Gundam series before it got all crazy with the new types and the psychics and whatnot, that follows the 08th team and their mission. And what I really like about it, aside from the excellent animation quality of the time, is that it treats the mobile units as machines of war. It isn't like G Gundam or Gundam Wing, where they're just like crazy super anime flying robots. They actually are treated like armory. You have different classes. You have to have support personnel. You have to take into account the terrain. You have to do maintenance. There's ammo limitation. There's weight limitations. You have to actually pilot the stupid thing instead of, you know, just fly around. It really, I mean, it's still an anime. There's still some ridiculousness here and there.
That actually sounds pretty cool. I wonder how they, you know, work around the limitations.
Yeah, it really is. There's a particular two-part episode where the team is put up against a veteran of the enemy, and they have to, they're hunting him down through this bombed out city, and the way that this guy pilots his machine to take out their artillery and use their own tactics against them is really impressive. It kind of stretches the credulity with the whole, you know, I was talking about how they're treated like actual machines, but it still feels somewhat grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you really knew how to use this machine and all of its boons, you could pull off some crazy stuff.
Nice.
And I don't know. It's worth a watch. If you get a chance, it's only like 13 episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I've gone through the whole thing, but that two-parter especially really endeared me to it. And again, because they treat it like the Gundams are not the focus. It's the characters and it's the conflict. The Gundams are just the machines. You know? Mm-hmm. If they were piloting tanks, it would be pretty much the same show.
Yeah.
Except for giant flying tank with the Doom laser, but you know, again, it's an anime.
My favorite anime of the few that I've watched, it's very few, less than a handful, Furikuri.
Oh, absolutely. Furikuri is amazing.
It's outstanding. Yeah,
you have to watch it a few times to really get it, but it's excellent.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious and like kind of touching emotionally. It's been a while since I've watched it, but I do remember it being very kind of surprisingly touching.
I mean, it was entertaining the first couple times through, and then somebody pointed out that it's basically an allegory for adolescence.
Right.
And when I looked at it that way, it's like, Now I feel like I'm back in college and picking this apart. And like, oh, yes, what's the deep symbolism of the...
And
it works that way. It works on that artistic level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And what else? Recently, I watched the Bayonetta movie.
I have not seen that.
Which is... It's interesting. It's an alternate take on the, I believe, alternate story of the first game. So I don't think you really need to play the game to sort of maybe kind of understand what's going on. It is a little weird in general just because it's Bayonetta.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. The animation's really cool. And, you know, whenever I hear the theme song from Afterburner kick in, you know, stuff's going down, man. You know, I love that song. And it's in the movie. I was like, holy crap. This battle is set to the theme song from Afterburner. I'm all in on this. and what else did I watch? Oh, Chrono Crusade I watched a couple of years ago.
Okay.
That one was interesting. I kind of prefer the first half of it. It's a little more, you know, lighthearted and fun at the beginning, and then it took a really dark, weird turn, and Rosette just kind of became kind of damsel-y and helpless, and it's like, oh,
yeah. I would recommend going through the manga. I've not seen the anime I've been through, but again, it kind of takes liberties with it and kind of does its own thing, and like you said, Rosette becomes very damsel-y.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in the manga version, she remains a prominent character throughout.
Okay, good.
Another one I'd recommend, if you've got the time and the money, is Akira, the manga. Not the weird movie. The movie is interesting in its own right. It makes no bloody sense. I haven't seen the redub. I've heard the redub is better, but it's still a weird movie. The manga is massive.
Mm-hmm.
It's each individual volume is like a phone book, and there's 6 volumes. It is... I mean, I literally felt physically tired after reading it, but it's really, really interesting to go through, and visually it's stunning. If you have a chance, it's worth going through.
the size of a good omnibus then, huh?
2 omnibi, I would say.
Oh, man. Holy crap. I've seen some pretty big ones.
Let me put it this way. If you go to like a Barnes & Noble or whatever and you see all 6 volumes next to each other on a shelf, that's probably half the shelf.
Probably the only thing there. Man. All right. That's the last question. Man, we really dug into that one.
That's the last question that's, you know,
that's one of the Bumblecast that's our last,
episodes out of the way.
That's our last question ever at this point. We're done. We have accomplished our goal.
All right. So time for our end of the show perks and nods. As always, you can find my body of work at bumbleking.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the monarch. That's where you can find all the episodes of Bumblecast listed. It's where you can find the Lost Hedgehog Tales and all sorts of stuff. Raiders of the Abyss, unfortunately, has the plug pulled on it, so I don't need to plug that again. And that's about it on my end. Kyle?
You can go check out my work, which is also one of the homes of this podcast. Man, this podcast is everywhere. It's like we planned that or something. But kngi.org is where you can check this out. K as in Kyle, N as in Nitro, game, G as in game, and I as in injection. The K does not actually stand for Kyle. That was just the first thing I could think of. But, yes, KNGI.org. Go check it out. NGI, Nitro Game Injection, of course, coming back next, or actually by the time this episode comes out, it will be this Saturday. So be sure to tune in over on the 8BitX Radio Network at 8BitX.com, 7 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday. And I think that's about it. I've got a Patreon myself. If you're enjoying the shows that I work on, specifically Game Fuel and NGI, then maybe you want to give a buck or two per episode. That would be awesome. Also has the unintended consequence of helping out this show. It's not directly related to this show, but hey, you can help out this show as well by helping out that Patreon. So if you really want to, consider it. If you don't, I guess I understand. No, it's fine. do we have anything else we want to mention? Oh, I almost forgot. I should have mentioned it's at the top of the show. We are now on iTunes. The Bumblecast is on iTunes for your listening and downloading pleasure. So be sure to hit up Bumblecast on iTunes, and please leave us a rating and review over there. It actually will help us, because the more ratings and reviews we get, the higher we'll climb up in the listings, and more people will see it, and more people will tune in, and hopefully also enjoy the show. So
we may even break into the top 1,000.
Wouldn't that be swell?
It would be amazing.
That would be incredible.
So that's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast Episode 3. We will see you next time on November 16th for Bumblecast Episode 4. Take it easy, everybody.
See you later. Thank you for listening to the Bumblecast. Please subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review on iTunes. Find more episodes at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Bumblecast is copyright Bumbleking Comics.
Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more music from Coda at bc.s3m.us. Pay what you want for the intro theme, as part of the compilation album Noisechan and Nugget, Adventures in Chiptune, at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. All proceeds are donated to Child's Play Charity.